Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio Show, The Gist of Freedom. We have on the line Mr. Kevin Grace. Are you on the line, Kevin?
Yes, I am, Leslie. How are you?
Great. Could you introduce yourself to the family?
I'm Kevin Grace from Baltimore, amateur historian, and working hard to get getting Joe Gann's name out there as far as who he was and what he did.
Okay, let's start off with Joe Gans. Who is he?
Well, Joe Gans was the first black American boxing champion. He's from Baltimore. He was born in 1874 and unfortunately died of tuberculosis at a young age, age 35, in, 100 years ago in August 10th. And he accomplished so much with so little, and unfortunately, being a nice guy, he got somewhat forgotten by history. But if you're an old school boxing person, you would know the name. But as far as an everyday person, most people don't know the name.
Okay. Could you just list some of the accomplishments that he attained while he was alive?
Okay. Well, as I mentioned, he won the world title as a lightweight, 133 pounds, 1902, and he retained that title through 1908, and I guess probably one of the biggest accomplishments was in 1906, he had a 42-round fight that's never been duplicated, and it was the highest purse ever. It was $30,000. Unfortunately, with Jim Crow laws, well, he was a champion, and he only got $10,000 of the $30,000, which is pretty bad. The following year, in 1907, he opened a hotel here in Baltimore called the Goldfield, named after the town where he had the fight in Nevada. And he gave UB Blake his start as a piano player. And most folks know UB Blake as the ragtime jazz player. And it was located right where the post office is on the other side of the parking garage. There's a post office annex. And that's where it was. And I just recently finally found a picture of it. It was very hard to find, and it's a lot different looking than I thought. And unfortunately, in the 60s, they knocked it down to make way for the post office and all that area.
Now, let's go back to that 42-round bout. Could you set the stage, the scene for our audience as to what a boxer's life was like, boxing during the Jim Crow era?
Well, unfortunately, you know, a lot of white fighters didn't want to give blacks opportunity. It was beneath them to lose to a black. And just as a lot of folks probably have followed the life of Jack Johnson, which, matter of fact, July 4th would be 100 years of his winning the heavyweight title in Reno. And he had to chase Jeffries around the country to get a fight finally. But, you know, like I said, in that situation, he needed a fight. So he had to take the least amount of money, and lots of times he carried a lot of fighters that were inferior to him to make them look good and hopefully have another bout later that most folks would bet and come out to see the fight. If he was beating everybody up like Mike Tyson, a lot of folks may, you know, in certain situations, race riots, and he was a gentleman inside the ring and outside the ring. There's a picture of him at the Goldfield fight. He knocked the guy through the ropes, and he's helping him through the rope. And that fighter battling Nelson was trying to kick him in his shins.
Now, you said race riots. There were race riots in the stands?
There are listed throughout the country. There were different accounts that after he beat maybe a white fighter that, you know, a mob will get upset, and there was, you know, maybe a black that would get hurt or beaten or killed or certain, you know, certain things like that. But there's numerous accounts, and you're talking in a time where lynching was common. You would see it in the newspaper throughout the country talking about certain lynchings. And like I said, Joe was pretty quiet. He fought racism a lot different than Jack Johnson. He wasn't boisterous, and, you know, he didn't do some of the things that Jack Johnson did. And unfortunately, I think that's why he got somewhat forgotten, because a heavyweight champion, bigger than life, and the way he went about fighting racism was a lot different than Joe, just being quiet and a gentleman inside and outside the rings.
Now, how is it possible that someone could let a fight go on for 42 rounds?
Well, that's what it was contracted to be. It was one of those fights that was kind of like, you know, you go into until the end. At that time, they used to have a lot of fights that were more than 10 rounds, 20 rounds, a lot different than what they are nowadays. And, of course, even the gloves were a lot different, the ounces.
Your partner, Colleen, mentioned that there were bare-knuckle fights right before this era. Do you want to expand on the bare-knuckle fights and compare them to the glove fights?
Oh, I'm not that much of an expert going back that far. I just concentrate more on Joe Gans just because he's a Baltimorean that got forgotten. You know, other folks know names of other folks that you know, they know UB Blake, but they don't know Joe Gans. You know, if it wasn't for Joe, you know, UB, who knows, you know, maybe he wouldn't have gotten a start in Baltimore or what have you. So
how would the knowledge of learning about Mr. Joe Gans help Baltimoreans out, young people out, what kind of positive impact do you think this knowledge and this recognition will have on youngsters from Baltimore and the community?
Well, he was a doer during time when blacks did not have much, you know, hard working. I mean, this the city, a lot of industry was either boat making or working on the docks, that type of industry. He didn't cry and, oh, you know, I should get this and get that and da-da-da. He went out, he did it, he worked hard. And like I said, even with his money, he invested it into a hotel. You know, it was basically the predecessor. It was before they had like a cotton club in New York, they had the gold field. This is where folks would come out, hear ragtime music, vaudeville acts and things like that after they got off, you know, different vaudeville shows would come to his hotel saloon establishment and see him. That was a place to be. So as far as folks nowadays saying they can't get this, they can't get that, look at a 42-round fight. And at the time where something like that has never been done before, he's getting the smaller purse. And, you know, you can imagine, and matter of fact, he had a lot of pressure on him. He had some folks saying, well, if you fight, we're going to give you this amount of money. And then some other people said, no, we bet on you. You better not lose. So how do you weigh those two options at time with the racial situation?
Well, I find it extraordinary at the age of 35 and younger that he was able to have the forethought to invest his money into a hotel. He was pretty young when he opened up the hotel.
Yeah, he would have been about 30. Well, he died 1910, age 35, so about 32 years of age. So it was a good investment, and he also was the first black in Baltimore to have a car as well. So cars had come out on the market. I guess that was about 1908. I have a picture of him in his car that he's got. So he's, you know, just remarkable. Like I said, this city needs some positive images. You know, we have a high drug situation here, high crime, and then we had a mayor that got kicked out of office for not reporting certain gifts that were, you know, given to them. So we need something positive. And like I said, folks know Cab Calloway, they know UB Blake, they know Babe Ruth, they know Billie Holiday. They don't know somebody like Joe Gans and the accomplishments that he, not just the Baltimore community, but the black community as well.
So you're saying he's a well-rounded person?
Yeah, definitely. Matter of fact, he was respected by a lot of folks. Even looking at the bio, obituary of his funeral, he had dignitaries come out. It was the biggest funeral for a black person at that time. I think there were maybe over 100 carriages that came to the cemetery, and his body was at the church for about two days. But folks would come from all around to see him, and he got telegrams from all over. I mean, his name was a household name, and just unfortunately, sometimes when you're a nice guy, you get kind of forgotten. And like I said, Jack Johnson, who he was supposed to be in his corner training him, but due to the fact he had tuberculosis, he couldn't do that. You know, Jack Johnson kind of took the forefront in the sports community. You know, at that time, boxing and horse racing were the biggest sports there were. That's in the golden age of sports. It was boxing or horse racing were the biggest, not baseball and football, but it was boxing and horse racing.
I got a quick question for you. Who do you hold responsible for allowing his legacy to meet this demise?
Well, like I mentioned about heavyweight, you know, a lot of lightweights get kind of forgotten in the mix. Heavyweights take over. And even at your home, sometimes you could be from a certain city and you don't get honored. I mean, look at, I could come up with a situation of, I don't know, Marvin Gaye in Washington, D.C. There's no statues or anything for him. Sometimes you could be from a certain area and they forget about you. It's just kind of one of those things.
Did he have family?
Did
he have family members Are you in touch with
Yeah, we've tracked down. He's got great granddaughters. I've talked to one of them, but I haven't got a chance to meet them, and they didn't know, one, who unfortunately Joe was, and two, his attributes and what he did. There was a reporter from the Washington Post that was able to track them down and put me in contact with them, and so it's kind of interesting too in that situation. But you know, I don't know how much they want to be involved or if they really care, unfortunately.
Well, I think that unfortunately is the state of many of our great legendaries, where the
mm-hmm.
family doesn't uphold their members' legacy. They don't, you know, and I think that's where the breakdown begins. But we are appreciative of people like you who will go out and see the value of his character and think it's worth this time and effort to bring it to the forefront. Now, as you're Kevin Grace, right?
Mm-hmm.
Out of all the people in Baltimore, and I'm pretty sure there's many more black legends in Baltimore that we don't know about, how is it that Kevin Grace decided, I'm going to attach myself and try to be this spokesperson for Joe Gaines? What is it about you that made you attracted to Joe Gaines?
Well, a couple of years ago, I'm in the Screen Actors Guild as well, and I was on a set of a movie, and I was talking to a friend of mine that's a boxing aficionado, and he made mention to me about Joe Gans' name, and I remember reading Jack Johnson's book called Unforgiven Old Blackness, seeing the name, but I didn't know any specifics. Then I started digging a little deeper, and he mentioned, yeah, he was sick, and he had a 42-round fight, and of course, when you hear a 42-round fight, you think, what? I started digging a little bit more and more, and I tell you, I just got drawn into it more and more, and there were some spiritual things, and you just can't say, well, that was a coincidence. As I mentioned, I'm in the Screen Actors Guild, and when I got my Screen Actors Guild card after doing years of background extra stuff on Homicide, the first year of The Wire, I had played a drug dealer named Scar that got shot at. We filmed on the same street where Joe Gans lived, his foster mother, on Argyle. It wasn't the same block. It was several blocks up. And that was in 2002. That was my first connection to it. I had no idea until years later when I started getting more into this since last year.
You are from Baltimore.
Yes. At the post office, I told you, you know, he had a hotel that was on that premise. So I said, well, I'll make a P.O. box, and that's kind of like a thing of coming full circle that, you know, folks send stuff down here, and, you know, folks, there was a young lady I met at the post office I was struck up conversation with, which normally I don't, and I was rushing to a meeting, and I was telling her about Joe Gans, what I was doing, and she said, I heard that name before, one of the boxing gyms near where I live had something about him. I said, yeah, well, he didn't live far from there, and then she said, and I told her the street Argyle, she said, I live on Argyle. So that was my Moses in a burning bush situation, to find a total stranger that I normally wouldn't have spoken to tell me that they lived on the same street. So those were two of the main things that, like I said, just spiritually a lot of things happened. And I just recently found his manager's grave on the other side of town. So, and I was kind of led to that. It was a little bit difficult, but it was easy to find.
Now, you mentioned earlier you had a picture of him in a car. You said he was
mm-hmm.
the first Baltimorean to own an automobile. How do you obtain all of these different artifacts from Joe Gaines?
Just different, a lot of things, internet, and as far as the picture of him in the car, there's a book about U.B. Blake. I happen to have a picture of Joe in his car. And it mentioned that he paid $5,555 for the car. And there's a picture of him with it and the little spare tire. It says on there, Joe Gans, lightweight champion, world champion, 1902-1908. And then there have been some things in history that were reported erroneous. They thought that because he had to fight middleweight, because like I said, he wasn't getting some fights as a lightweight, that he relinquished his title. That was not the case. He still kept his title, and even if the Goldfield fight, he mentioned he was the champion. Even, unfortunately, at his cemetery, there was a boxing organization that fixed up his headstone and the family headstone and sandblasted it, and they put the plaque down, but they put the wrong years. They just put 1902 to 1904 and then 1906 to 1908. He was a champion the whole time through. So you unfortunately get even erroneous things, but like I said, if a picture like that shows you, you know, 1902 to 1908 is black and white in your face. And unfortunately, again, with the media at that time, with races, would put certain things down, and even there were some pictures drawn of them. If you look at like a black Sambo type thing, how, you know, it's very derogatory. So, you know, you're fighting all those type things too. At the turn of the century. So, you know, it's a lot different than it is nowadays. So when folks say they don't have things, they can look back at Joe Gans, that was a doer, that accomplished things, got things done, even though he was living at a very hard time.
How are the schools receiving you if you have already embraced them or went to them for help? Have you worked with the school system in Baltimore?
No, not yet. I just want to get, you have to educate some folks, just like when I met you at the What Expo, I gave you the city paper. That was probably the first introduction for some folks to know about Joe Gans. So sometimes when you get some big information like that, you got to digest it and then hopefully be able then to accept it and move on. And, I mean, because people can always blame, well, why didn't it get done and why didn't they do this? Okay, we've got the information now. What are we going to do now to make amends for that? You know the information. Here it is. Let's do something about it. I would like to get, matter of fact, a school named after Joe. I mean, there's so many schools named after some politicians that you never heard of and never will. Why not have something named after Joe, especially in his old neighborhood? There's a couple of schools around there that it would be great to put, you know, his name on it.
Well, we have a gentleman out of New York, Jacob, I can't think of his last name. He specializes, he was on a show, in getting historical names on signs in New York City. So I think you should be in contact with him, and I'm pretty sure if you get him on your side, he'll help you get it done in Baltimore. He's been doing it for over 20 years.
So, okay, wow.
Yeah, so I wish I could get him on the line right now. But it's a little too late. You know that we're only down to 6 minutes of the show. It went pretty fast,
okay.
Didn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's flying. So you've been working with Ms. Colleen. How do you pronounce the last name?
Acock.
Acock.
And she was one of the reasons why when I picked up her book, it kind of fueled the thing into me to do something. You know, and even like I said, there was a picture of the Goldfield that I found, and I found that was from the Baltimore Sun in 1959, and it kind of made the comparison that, yeah, even Baltimore doesn't have anything for Babe Ruth, you know, and he was a white man. But ironically, since that time, well, Babe Ruth, they've got his house where he was born is a museum, and then they also, where the baseball stadium is, there's a big statue of him out in the outfield area. And the only constant out of that article is there's still nothing for Joe Gans. And that was 1959 Baltimore Sun article that had something on the Goldfield. But with Colleen, I got in touch with her. I never met her until February. We had talked by phone, and she was definitely supportive of a lot of different things that I did and opened a door for a lot of things to happen. We do have an event in August, 2 days before Joe's anniversary of his passing at the UB Blake Center, which what is fitting to have it there. Like I said, a place, a person that Joe gave a start to, the UB Blake Center, which is on Howard Street in Baltimore, on Sunday, August the 8th, from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock, we're going to be honoring Joe Gans and another Baltimorean, a lady named Henrietta Vinton Davis. So you're talking about there's other folks here in Baltimore that people don't know about. This is another lady as well. She was a black Shakespearean actor and social activist. She was influential in the Marcus Garvey movement and also did some work with Frederick Douglass. So I've collaborated with actor Clayton LaBeouf. Most folks may know him from Bondfather on Homicide and he also, the first season, played Orlando on The Wire, and he also was in the movie Something the Lord Made, which was an HBO movie about Vivian Thomas. He played Vivian Thomas's brother. He played along with Mos Def. So this gentleman, I've known him for years, and we're collaborating and honoring these two great ancestors that happen to be both Baltimoreans.
Okay. What in your family life do you think influenced you to get involved with history?
No, just something that that I liked. You know, even when I go downtown Baltimore, I like looking at old buildings and seeing how the facade was and then trying to imagine how it was at a certain time. I love looking at old photos and just seeing and imagining, even going to a graveyard. There's a lot of history there. Even where Joe is buried, he's buried at Mount Auburn Cemetery. It's an old black cemetery, and it was one of the only places where blacks could be buried with respect. Unfortunately, it's fallen into some disrepair, but things were a lot different. At that time, family members would take care of the plot, cut the grass, and would have picnics and things as such. Folks moved out of the area, died, and then just things just, you know, started growing, grass, trees, shrubs, and it
got
a little bit more
disrepair. As someone who loves history, how does it make you feel when you see a place like that being neglected?
It's sad, but things are changing there. Matter of fact, I have the pastor from that takes care of the cemetery, the church, Sharp Street Memorial. Matter of fact, we're before the ceremony that we're having on August 8th, we're having a service to honor Joe Gans at 10 o'clock at Sharp Street Memorial Church, which is on Edding and Dolphin Street. If you go to on our Facebook page, Friends of Joe Gans, it'll be posted there, and also joegans.com. And there are things that are happening there. They're going to start fixing up the place if they got the funds to do certain things. And, I mean, last year they had the Department of Corrections come through and cut down the grass. And unfortunately, with all the rain we had, it sprouted back up. But they're going to be taking care of things a lot better so it doesn't get neglected and folks feel that, you know, folks are being dishonored and disrespected.
Well, that's very nice, Kevin. So instead of being dissuaded by, it looks like every time you get a bit ahead, you run into another story of black history, which can dishearten you, you know. But it seems as though instead of that happening to you, you're noticing people are all coming on board, trying to help.
Exactly. Right, exactly. Unfortunately, a lot of folks sometimes don't see the connection in some things, and, you know, they keep questioning why you're combining certain people instead of embracing what we're doing. Unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of, like I said, you're either a doer or a dreamer in this world, and there's so a lot of folks that they don't want to do, they want to sit back and critique what you're doing and saying, well, you should do it this way, but they don't want to help you, you know, achieve a certain goal, which is unfortunately kind of sad, or some people don't embrace our culture, unfortunately. So that's sad as well, but not everybody's going to be receptive to a certain message. But those that are, hey, we've got to stop for you. You know, this is what our, you know, here's the message. You know, what are we going to do about it?
Okay. I just added 15 more minutes to the show because it seems like we have a lot more to talk about. And I don't want you to feel rushed. Could you just recap the events in the website and the Facebook information, the events that are coming up?
Okay, sure. We have on Sunday, August the 8th, like I said, that's 2 days before Joe Gans' anniversary of his passing, we have a church service at the Sharp Street Methodist Memorial Church, and that's located on Edding and Dolphin Street, and the service will be from 10 o'clock to 11:30, and it's in honor of Joe Gans. And then at 2 o'clock later that day at the U.B. Blake Cultural Center, which is located at 847 North Howard Street, it's right in front of the light rail. The light rail runs right in front of the place, so there's no reason why you can't come by if you don't drive. We have tickets on sale for $25 for the event, and like I said, we're honoring Joe Gans and Henrietta Vinton Davis, and it'll take place from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And I'm, like I said, collaborating with actor Clayton LaBeouf. The next day, Colleen is doing a book signing out at the Towson Public Library at 7 p.m. If you haven't gotten her book, you can get it on Amazon or you can purchase it from her. It's a very good story. It's the biography about Joe Gans. And then on that Tuesday, which is the big day, we've got several events happening. At noon at Mount Auburn Cemetery, we're going to be honoring Joe Gans. We'll be putting a wreath down and having like a little service there at Mount Auburn Cemetery. At 2 o'clock, I'm still trying to get a street sign unveiled for him, one of those street signs, Joe Gans Way. We've got to make sure the city, make sure that the community is receptive to having that. So we're supposed to be doing an unveiling at 2 o'clock on Argyle Avenue. And like I said, that'll be posted up on the Friends of Joe Gans site on Facebook and also on Colleen's site, joegans.com. And Gans, of course, is spelled G-A-N-S.
Now,
so,
could you tell the listeners that may be visiting as tourists in Maryland or are considering all the other things they can do while they're in Maryland coming to your
area? Oh, we have a harbor, beautiful harbor, and it's still one of the top in the country. Baseball team may be in town. I think the later that day on the Tuesday that Joe Gans passed away at the First Mariner Arena, I think the Black Eyed Peas are in town, you know, Fergie, so they're a pretty popular group. also that night, Colleen is doing another book signing at Ena Pratt Library at 7 o'clock as well, so I'll be remiss not to mention that as well. And if you also go on the website, we've got discounted hotel out by the airport, the La Quinta. They're giving us a Joe Gans rate, which is about $54. So,
what is the name of that hotel?
La Quinta Suites and Inn.
Okay.
That's at the BWI. You just have to call them and ask for the Joe Gans rate, which is about $54.
And what about the Black Wax Museum? That's also around, right? Nearby?
Well, for them, we had, initially, like I said, in February, I was trying to do a fundraiser to get the statue, raise money for them. There is a PayPal account on their website, if you go to that, if folks are inclined to. Right now, what Clayton and I are hoping to do is to raise funds to make a 15, 20-minute short film dedicated to Joe Gans' memory. And so that's what we're doing, these little events, speaking engagements, things as such. I hopefully like to do it around the country to raise funds to do something like that and also to put those that type of film in different film festivals so folks will know about Joe Gans and some of his accomplishments. But it'll be something done in modern times but with a flashback about Joe Gans and what some of the things he's accomplished.
Now, I know that you're very involved with the boxing community. How has the boxing community received Joe Gans and, you know, your enthusiasm to reclaim his name?
Well, there's one gentleman who's got a after-school program here in Baltimore, and hopefully I can get you to get Marvin on. He's got Umar Boxing, and it's the only after-school program that does something like this. He teaches, you know, kids get out of school at 3 o'clock, and, you know, that's a time when they can definitely get into a lot of trouble. So it's called No Hooks Before Books. And, you know, he's got computers for kids to learn. He's got some teachers in there, and he's teaching kids all different ages, male and girls and boys. And he's been very receptive. When I went to him, and, man, he's been from day one opening the doors for different people that introduced me to people. And he, of course, knew about Joe Gans, and he was upset that nobody did anything. And, you know, he's on board. And, matter of fact, we're going to honor him at our event. Unfortunately, I'm putting the cart before the horse. I didn't get a chance to tell him But just letting you know that we will be honoring him for the stuff that he does. He's the only person involved.
Can I have his name again? I think his name is worth mentioning a few times.
Yeah, Marvin McDowell, and that's Umar Boxing, U-M-A-R, Boxing. It's on North Avenue, and it's a rough part of the city. And he takes a looking at those young people. It's not a good area at all.
And what is the name of his program? I love it.
No hooks before books. So you got to make sure your grades are up. And I also said to him, I said, well, you know, what about some of the public perception that he's thinking that, you know, boxing is bad, you're teaching, you know, kids then to be thugs or whatever. And he says, no, it's not like that. It's just like even like karate classes. It teaches you conditioning and a mental state. And, you know, even with boxing, most of it is mental. You know, can you do it? And
right?
And if you're that bad, you think you can beat everybody else, get in the ring and fight. You know, so it teaches a lot of kids discipline. And like I said, you got to have your studies down and have them correct. And also athleticism of boxing. So like I said, it's not about fighting and that, you know, you're teaching somebody to be a, you know, going out and beat people up. It's not like that. And it's just like even in karate, the last thing you do is want to fight. You know,
right.
So you'll talk your way out of it. But he's got a really, really great program, and hopefully I'll hook you up with Marvin to tell you about what he's doing.
Well, I want to thank you for the hookups that you already given me. You gave me Miss Colleen Acock, you and yourself, and because of you diverting your slot to Colleen, we had several mix-ups, and I'm so happy we finally got together and got you on the air, even though this is not my regular schedule, but I think it's worth the time, and I really appreciate everything that you're doing. And I have one more question before we end the show. On your Facebook, and I also took the picture and posted on my blog show, you have a picture of a statue of a boxer in the Hall
mm-hmm.
of Fame. Could you talk about that picture and how it relates to what you're doing with Joe Gaines?
Well, that is Joe Gaines. That's the picture of Joe Gaines, the statue at Madison Square Garden. And that's really the only, I guess, monument to him. I think that was made maybe in the 20s or 30s by Brigham Young's grandson. And I would love to get something like that here. Lots of times when you see a statue or something to that effect, and it's a person of color, you can't tell if it's a person of color or exactly, you know, what it is. But it's life size. It's stands 5'6". I stood next to it. And it's very well done. I think he, matter of fact, may have posed for it. And but yeah, I would love to get something like that here. Like I said, other places may recognize, just like different artists get appreciated overseas, the jazz and the blues musicians to get appreciated over in Europe, but they don't get appreciated here in America. And you know, you have a boxer like Joe not appreciated here in Baltimore, but in New York, just due to the fact the promoter Tex Rickert, who was the more or less the architect of Madison Square Garden, with the tie-in is as far as why there's a statue up there. And I hope to work with someone at Madison Square Garden, which I recently talked to, about doing something there, too, a reflating ceremony. Unfortunately, of all years, they're doing some construction work at the garden, and we're going to see if we can work around that, whether it be we've got to make the ceremony a couple days earlier or a month earlier, I don't know, but I definitely want some respect to the Joe Gaines statue as well. A lot of folks have probably seen it and didn't know what it is.
Well, this has been a great show, very informative. To recap, we talked about his hotel, his car, the 42-round bout, and if someone wants to get in contact with you, could you give them your information?
Sure, they can reach me on Facebook, Kevin Grace, and there's also Friends of Joe Gaines on Facebook. That's a good way of getting in touch. And also, you can go to joegaines.com and get in touch with Colleen, and she will pass on any information to me as well, any comments.
Well, thank you, Kevin, and keep hooking me up with these great guests, and we'll be in touch.
Yes, hey, that's what it's all about, is collaborating. You know, a lot of us, we don't want to share information, and we're afraid. So on this whole process, that's one of the things I've learned, but I'm not afraid to share.
And I'll connect you through Facebook to my friend. I call him the Sign Man, Jacob.
Okay.
So look forward to that, and have a good day.
Okay, you too. Thank you now.
All right, bye-bye.
This was the most incredible moment of my life and all of your lives when our president-elect said to the American people, and he said it very smooth and calmly, he said, if there's anyone who still doubts, that America is not a place where all things are possible. Tonight is your answer. It's the answer that led those who've been told for so long by so many to be cynical and fearful and doubtful of what we can achieve to put our hands on the arc of history and bend it once more towards the hope of a better day. It's been a long time coming, but tonight, because of what we did at this defining moment, change has come to America.
Must be given to the tea that we dispense.